So wanted to just clarify one point because somebody emailed me during the week and I said if I didn't say anything, I would leave it as such. But the Rav Schechter's advice for those who are having Kriyas HaTorah on Shabbos, I'd probably say the Shabbos Mincha, but was to have one person get all the aliyahs. And on Shabbos, he said not to have a maftir, but let the, since b'di'eved shvi'i counts for maftir. In other words, maftir counts as the seventh aliyah if you haven't said the Chatzi Kaddish. The Gemara has a question in Megillah whether maftir is ole l'minyan shiva, whether the maftir counts towards the requisite number having had seven aliyahs. And the maskana of the Gemara is, the conclusion is, yes, it does. So our practice is normally on a regular Shabbos, we read seven aliyahs, then we make a Chatzi Kaddish to indicate that now the minimum, that now the mandatory krios, or the mandatory seven aliyahs are done, and the maftir doesn't really count towards those because we have seven plus one. But in this context, he seems to lean towards saying, since one person is getting all the brachos over and over, he thinks it's better just to have seven aliyahs. Don't make Chatzi Kaddish after, he probably say Chatzi Kaddish after Haftarah, but not before the Haftarah, not after Shvi, but rather after the Haftarah, and you just only have seven total aliyahs, you don't have a maftir. Okay. Anyway, so I said that would be the default option, and I checked his tshuva, and that's what he wrote. Okay, so anyway, we left off on the bottom line of Daf Ches Samad Aleph, Amar Rav Huna Bar Yehuda Amar Rabbi Ami, and this is a Gemara that we learned the last time I had the privilege of being present on Shabbos at KJ. It seems like forever ago, but it must have been some point in the fall, probably like Shabbos Parshas Bereishis. And we're going to go over it very quickly now. But Rav Huna Bar Yehuda Amar Ami says, La'olam yashlam adam parshias imat zibor, shlei mikrodecha targum. So a person should always complete their parshios with the tzibur. What that means, we'll talk about in a moment. And then the Gemara continues on Daf Chesam and Reis, va'afilu ataros v'divon. Even ataros v'divon. So what does that mean? So ataros v'divon are two cities in Transjordan, in the tribal lands of the two and a half Shvatim who received their inheritance in Eber HaYarden. In Parshas
Matos,
at the beginning of Periklamid Beis, it says that there were these cities, Ataros v'Divon v'Yazer v'Nimra v'Cheshbon v'Elalei u'Svam u'Nevo u'Va'on. So Ataros v'Divon is shorthand for that. And that's a pasuk basically just of names of places. So the Gemara says you have to do Shnai Mikorech HaTagum and even Ataros v'Divon. And why is this so important? Shekol ha-mashlim parshiyosev ha-matzibor ma'arichin lo yamav ushnosav. So someone who completes his parshios along with the tzibor, so his years and his days and his years are lengthened. I probably said this before. I still haven't located the original source for this, but I think that I'm getting closer to it, actually. Something in the current Daf Yomi around today. There's an expression, arichos yamim v'shanim. So someone I know once said to me that when you wish someone arichos yamim v'shanim, so yamim means length of life. But you see that you see people typically, or people who are past 100 years old, people 105, 106, the oldest person in the world, they're living, but typically it's not exactly a great quality of life. So when you talk about arichos yamim v'shanim, so one of them refers to length of actual length of life, chronological length, and the other one means living to be old, but living with a good quality of life. So anyway, the Gemara says, "Ma'arichin lo yamav ushnosav." If you read Shnei Mekavecha Targum, Gemara doesn't explain why. I presume that someone who is mashlim parshios of a matzibur has two advantages working for him or her. Number one is that they're committed to the mitzvah of Talmud Torah and to absorbing the Torah's message. And number two, they're connected to a community. They're connected to the tzibur. Okay. Now, what does it mean? Firstly, what is the nature of this mitzvah? So there is a very minority opinion, and one which is not accepted. It's not, I don't know that it's even quoted. I could be wrong in the Beis Yosef. But I'm going to share my screen with you to show you the position of, it's quoted in the name of the Ravon. People often say it's the Rav Yah. You can see my Bar Ilan screen now. I just have to manipulate this. Hold on. So what we're looking at here is a passage Firstly, I'll show you the Rambam. The Rambam at the bottom now says, Afa pisha adam shomea kol haTorah kula, b'chol Shabbos b'tzibur. You hear the Kriyas HaTorah every week. Chayiv likros la'atzmo b'chol shavua v'shavua. You have to read every week the Seder shel Osa Shabbos, that parsha or that sedra, shnayim mikra ve'echad targum. And the Rambam says, u'pasuk she'ein bo targum, if there's no targum on a pasuk, ko'ehu shalosh pa'amim ashiyashlim parshiyosav v'matzibur. If there's no targum on a pasuk, then you read the pasuk three times, and that's how you complete it. So it's either two readings of the Hebrew and one of the targum, or three of the Hebrew if there's no targum. I'll throw this question out at you for a second. Does anybody want to suggest? I'm going to stop my share for a second, just so I can see everybody. Where did the Rambam come up with this idea that you read it a third time if there's no targum on it?
Can you repeat the question?
Sure, absolutely. Where did the Rambam come up with this idea that if there's no targum on the pasuk, you read it three times?
You didn't have to repeat the question.
Okay. So the answer is, I might not have realized this. I probably would have realized this on my own. But it's a commentary that a number of Rishonim attribute to Rashi, although our Rashi doesn't say it. If you take a look at our Rashi on Daf Ches Amud Beis, Rashi just says, Afilu ataros v'divon, she'in bo targum. That's all Rashi says. He just explains, why does the Gemara pick shnayim mikra v'echad targum, even ataros v'divon? So what is the, Rashi doesn't tell you, what would you have thought? In other words, if the Gemara said, la'olam yashlam adam parshios v'matzibu shnayim mikra targum, and it hadn't said ataros v'divon, so what would you have thought? Now, assuming Rashi's correct, that Ataros V'Divon have no targum on it, and that's an issue that's going to be challenged, we're going to challenge in a moment. But if they haven't, so therefore what? So what would you have thought, what are you supposed to do? What would you have thought to do? So a lot of Rishonim attribute to Rashi, but he doesn't say this explicitly, that Rashi believes that if there's no targum on a pasuk, then you read the pasuk three times. That is seems to be obvious as the source for the Rambam's position. In other words, the Rambam understood the Gemara saying that you're supposed to read the parsha three times, twice in the Hebrew, once in the Aramaic translation, even Ataros V'Divon that has no Aramaic translation, you read it three times. And obviously you have to read it in Hebrew. Or you might say the Aramaic translation would be the exact same thing as the Hebrew. So Rashi, it's not clear what he's driving at. Other Rishonim have a different interpretation, but that would appear to be the source for the Rambam. Remember, just as a general methodological comment, there is essentially nothing in the Mishneh Torah that the Rambam quotes that isn't found in the Gemara unless he tells you otherwise. If the Rambam tells you that something is a takana, it's an enactment of the Gaonim, which is post-Talmudic, so you know you're not going to find it in the Gemara. But as a general rule, pretty much every statement in the Rambam Mishneh Torah can be traced to the Gemara, and sometimes it's obvious, but occasionally it's not so easy to find. And there's only one exception. And when you have the exception, the Rambam tells you. The Rambam has two magic words that he tells you when he wants to indicate that he has no source in the Gemara, but he believes it to be correct anyway. And those two words are Yera'eli. When the Rambam writes Yera'eli, I don't know how many times he does that, but probably dozens of times in Mishneh Torah, Yera'eli is a code. It's a signal. There's no source in the Gemara for this. But the Rambam doesn't say Yera'eli, that if the Pasuk has no Targum, you read it three times. So I assume that that's how the Rambam read the words, Vafilu ataros v'divon. In other words, the principle of the Gemara is read the parasha three times, twice in the original, once in the Aramaic translation. And if you have something with no Aramaic translation, just read it three times. The interesting idea, what is the notion of three times? So I haven't seen anybody talk about it here, but there's a Tosfos on the bottom of Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis and Megillah, the last Amud Beis, where Tosfos points out, and this is relevant to the Balei Kriya. I don't see Larry here right now, but unless he's not showing up on my screen. But
I'm here.
The Baal Koreh is not supposed to read from the Torah in the Tibor unless he has read the Parsha three times. Tosfos on the bottom of Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis in Megillah quotes some medrash or something based upon a pasuk, I think, in Iyov. So Tosfos says that you're going to read the Torah for the Tzibur, you read it three times. So in some ways, it's almost like the person who reads Shnayim Mikra V'Echad Targum, he hasn't read the Hebrew three times, except for on the passages that have no Targum, but somehow there is a common idea of preparing the parasha three times. Okay.
So that would close most teen minyanim.
Oh, what's that?
That would close, get rid of most teen minyanim.
I don't understand that, Larry. The older Balei Kriya should need it less than the teens.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, so I'm going to go back to the Rambam, and I want you to look at so there's a commentary on the Rambam. If you look here, the letter Shin. I'm going to close this window, but you're now looking at Hagos Maimonides. I don't know if we've ever looked at Hagos Maimonides before, but Hagos Maimonides was written by Rabbeinu Hillel, who was one of five major Talmidim of the Maharam Rutenberg. The other four were the Rush, the Tashbetz, the Mordechai, and the Shari Dura, Rav Shimon Duran. But Hagos Maimonides is basically a commentary on the Rambam where he quotes Toras Ashkenaz, especially when it disagrees with the Rambam. So it's a great way to get Bekias and Shas, because if you want to see the Rambam, which often represents the interpretation of Spanish Rishonim, not always, but, and you want to then see what Ashkenazic tradition, how they interpreted a particular halachas, particular gemaras, it's a great place to look. So in the middle of this passage here, so he quotes, I just have to spot it again, he cites the following. Kasav, I don't know who the Rishonim is, Shematza Besifro Shel Ra'avon. The Ra'avon, Rabbi Lezer ben Nathan of Worms, was one of the Hasidei Ashkenaz. His son, I believe, was Rabbeinu Yoel Halevi, and his grandson is much more famous, the Rav Yah, Rabbi Lezer ben Rav Yoel Halevi. So I've heard this position attributed to the Rav Yah, but he, which wouldn't surprise me because he's quoting it from his Zayda, but here it's quoted in the name of the Ra'avon. La'olam yashlam adam parshios of matzibur. He says, Nira li the biyachid hador bikrach she'ein lo yud likros batora ayri. It's dealing with someone who lives in a village where you don't have 10 people and you can't read Kriyas HaTorah. The tzarech lechavin hashah shatzibur koren beis haknesses v'yiprahu gam b'yochad shnayim yikra keneged shnayim shekoren beis haknesses v'echad tagum keneged hametarken. This is kind of really fascinating. It's a very difficult interpretation. It's one that I said earlier. I don't think it's even quoted in the Beis Yosef, but maybe I'm wrong. The Ravon suggests that what you're imitating, really supposed to do Shnayim Yikra HaTargum, when you don't have a minyan, at the time that the community is reading the Kriyas HaTorah. Why? He says, because there are two people reading the Kriyas HaTorah, and theoretically there's a Meturgam on it as well. Which is, now, how are the two people reading Kriyas HaTorah? How many Balei Kriya read at a time in KJ? I think one. Except that you have to understand that the Bal Kriya and the Ola are really, somehow he's arguing, are both actually reading. And then there's a Meturgamon after each Pasuk who recites the Targum. The obvious difficulty with this Pasuk is at the time that the statement of La'olam Yashlam Adam Parshiyosim Matzibur Shnayim Mikra Ve'echa Targum was made, there was no Bal Kriya. The institution of the Bal Kriya is a much later institution. I think the way the Rush explains it, Kadesh Lo Levayish is Misha Enlo, not to embarrass the person who couldn't read. So instead of having each person read their Aliyah, which was the original Takana, instead, one person reads, but the Ola is supposed to read along. Is supposed to read along with the Bal Kriya. So, but that institution is later when Rav Ami quoted, whoever said Rav Ami, when Rav Huna Bar Yehuda quoted Rav Ami saying that. That was at a time when there was only one Kori Betzibor. And I would even guess, by the way, that in Ashkenaz, by the time that you had two readers in the Tzibor, that you had a regular Bal Kriya, you probably no longer had a Meturgamon. By that point, the Targum had already stopped. It's already in the times, days of Balei Tosfos, they're not using Targum regularly. So it's a very interesting interpretation that the Ravan offers, but it's a very difficult in terms of the Gemara. Either way, it's very much a minority opinion. The way I explained when we learned this topic back in September or October was that Shnei Mikovecha Targum is fundamentally the private Kriyas HaTorah of the individual. In other words, the Tzibur reads the Torah the way the Tzibur reads the Torah, and then you have your own private mitzvah of Kriyas HaTorah, which is Shnayim Mikra V'Echad Targum. And I observed back then as well, it's not so clear that women are exempt from this mitzvah. Even though, generally speaking, women are not Chayavas in Talmud Torah, there's no indication in Shulchan Aruch or in the Rishonim that a woman, in fact, is exempt from this mitzvah. And if a woman has the same obligation in theory, theoretically, of Kriyas HaTorah as a man, it's not a Chovas HaYochid, as I mentioned last week, but it's Chovas HaTzibur, the community's obligation. You need a minion of men, but the Kriya itself is not necessarily more upon men than women, then it could very well be that women are chayavos also shnayim mikvecha targum. As you know, I have general tendencies towards chumra, so I would recommend that women be machmir here also to do shnayim mikvecha targum.
Can they then be motzeyas?
Well, I think you have to read it yourself. In other words, it's not hearing it. It's the act of kriya yourself. I think it's a beautiful thing to study together as a family, But I think each individual has the obligation of kriya.
It sounds like it's a mitzvah haguf.
I think it most certainly is, but there's no indication anywhere that women are pturis. It's possible they are. In other words, it's something, you know, it could fall in the category, you know, of how do you know that Yaakov Avinu wore a yarmulke? The answer is it says Vayetze Yaakov Mebersheba Vayelech
Harana. Not going to go out without a hat.
Left the Chari. Wasn't wearing a yarmulke, right? So it could be that the Gemara, that the poskim just don't say it because it's obvious, but there is no indication. It would be a good thing to be machmir for it. It's good for everybody. Okay. Now, one of the interesting questions that does arise is the use, and I think we discussed this a little bit of another translation. And people, clearly, when people ask me, I don't recommend doing Targum Onklus unless your goal is to learn Aramaic, which is a very laudable goal. That's how I learned Aramaic. I learned Aramaic by reading Onklus because I knew the Psukim already. And since Onklus is a mostly literal translation, you can gain a lot of Aramaic very, very quickly that way. But most people are not interested or are not in the place where they're going to be looking to study Aramaic. So my recommendation is what the Mechaber quotes and some of the Rishonim quote is to use Perusho Shorashi, to use Rashi's commentary, which is available in translation for anybody who needs it. The question is raised, what about a different language translation of the Torah? So if you take a look at the bottom, at the posters on the bottom of Daf Ches Amud Aleph, turn the page back for 1 second, the last three lines in posters. So Tosa says that those who say that you can read Shnai Mikvecha Targum, the Targum can be in whatever your vernacular is. That's not a problem because it explains, it helps people understand what the text is saying. Ki chamosha Targum, Tosa says, Mefaresh la'am ha'oretz, just as the Targum in the time of the Gemara helped the Amei Haaretz understand the Kriyas HaTorah because their spoken language was Aramaic. That's why the Targum said Aramaic. So therefore, if you're French and you understand French, so then it would make sense to translate it to French. However, Tosfos says Valona Hira. He thinks it's not correct. Sharei Targum Mefaresh B'Masha In Lumo Min HaIvri. No, you have to. Targum Onklus is not purely a literal translation. There are many cases where Onklus deviates from the translation, and therefore, one is supposed to. It's not just the translation of the Hebrew, but it's the authorized commentary found in the translation that is necessary. As Tosa says, Kidashulchan bekama duchte, we find in a number of places in Shas, the Amar Rabbi Yosef ilmole Targuma dahaikra lo yadana mai ka'amar. Rabbi Yosef says, if it weren't for the Targum in this pasuk, we would have no idea what it means. What it means is that the Targum is not a literal translation. The Targum fills in a certain context, sometimes a little background. And therefore, if you're going to read just a regular English or a French or a Spanish translation, you're not going to get that. Al-Kain, Tosa says, Ein lomar b'shum lashon, pam shlishis ki im b'lashon Targum. It has to be in lashon Targum. So as I said, I don't recommend people do that because people aren't going to understand the Aramaic either. So instead, I mean, you could read, there are English translations of Onklus if you're very interested. But nonetheless, to me, it seems that the smartest thing to do is to learn with Rashi. The one thing that does, of course, emerge from that is that if there's no Rashi on a pasuk, then according to the Rambam, and according to what some say Rashi here actually said, you should actually read the pasuk a third time. Okay. And now with regards to Ataros V'Divon.
So do you have to understand the Targum, Rabbi?
I think so. Okay. It doesn't make any sense to read Targum Onklus if you don't understand it. You know, it's not davening up. You know, you could say that reading the Torah is davening up. That's what it is, because the whole point that you need a Targum is because you don't understand the Hebrew. But to read the Targum in Aramaic when you don't understand it doesn't make any sense. I would repeat that for people who are a little bit inclined and have a fair degree of mastery of the Hebrew side, you can learn Aramaic pretty quickly by reading Targum Onklus, because 90% of the time Onklus is literal. And when he's not, you can usually tell because it's much larger than the Pasuk. Okay. Now, with regards to Ataros Fedivon, Satosos on Chesam and Beis, and a number of Rishonim say this. He says, Perish Rashi, Afilu Ataros Fedivon, She'en Bo Targum, She'etzorach L'Kroso Shlosha Pa'amim, the Ivri. So here, again, we looked at Rashi. Our Rashi didn't say that. It's possible that Tosas just inferred that's what Rashi meant, because if you're not reading a Targum, what's the point of saying, Afilo Ataros V'Divon? Of course you would read it at least twice. So maybe when Rashi says, afilo ataras v'divon, she'en bo targum, Rashi means, what does it mean you do? You mean you read it a third time. But Rashi certainly doesn't state it explicitly. Now that those words, that Tosfos, it seemed to be part of the quote from Rashi, she'tzarech l'kroso shlosh apamim be'ivri, are not in our Rashi. Okay. Now, v'kasha, Tosfos says, on that position, Tosfos doesn't like it. Amai nakar ataras v'divon, she'yeshlo mikom akom targum Yerushalmi. So a word about this, a few words about Targum. Here I can do it. Normally when I give an introduction to Targum, I have to do some Aramaic too. And that's never really fun. But here I can just talk a little bit about the Targum. How many Targumim are there on the Torah? So the answer is, according to the Talmud Bavli, known to the Talmud Bavli, there would appear to be one Targum, one official Targum on the Torah, and that Targum is the Targum of Unglus. The Gemara says that the Targum in Megillah, Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, says that the Targum alat shel Torah, unklus hager amaro mipi Rabbi Eliezer for Rabbi Yoshua. So Megillah Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. That our targum was based from unklus hager, and he. It says literally almost in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yoshua. Interestingly enough, however, there is another tradition that looks very, 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 very similar to this, but it's found in the Yerushalmi. And the Yerushalmi in Megillah, I think it's not at the beginning of the Masechta. I think it's, I don't know what daf it is in the Yerushalmi, but when you get to the Mishnah on Daf Tes in Megillah, which talks about writing Sefer Torah in other languages, it's that, I believe the Yerushalmi is there. The Yerushalmi says that the Targum Shel Torah was Akilas Hager, translated it before in the presence of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua, and they praised it with a verse from Tehillim, Yof Yofis Mibnei Adam, a pasuk from Tehillim. Now, when you look at the Yerushalmi carefully, one of the things that you discover is the Yerushalmi is not talking about an Aramaic translation. The Yerushalmi is actually talking about a Greek translation. And it is well known to us, historically speaking, that there was the original Greek translation of the Torah, what we refer to as the Septuagint, the Targum HaShivim. The Gemara Megillah Daf Tes Amud Aleph records a story or a legend that's actually found earlier in a work that is treated as part of the pseudepigrapha, not part of our Tanakh, but one of these Svarim HaChitzonim, called the Letter of Aristeus, which is much closer to the time of when the Greek was translated originally. And it has this story, you know, some type of really amazing story about how the Targum, the Greek Targum ala Torah came to be. However, in the first century CE, there were many who noticed that that when you compared the Greek text to the Hebrew text, there were some real differences between them. Now, why the Septuagint had different translation? Sometimes because it has to do with translation. Sometimes because the translators of the Septuagint had what we call a different forlaga, a different original text, the Hebrew text in front of them. It's not a question of whether it was correct or not, but that's what they had in front of them. But because of these differences, there were several individuals who set out to retranslate the Hebrew into Greek. And there were three different translations done, one by Symmachus, one by Theodotion, and one by Achilla. And Achillas Hager is clearly what the Yerushalmi is referring to, is this Greek translation. And when he translated it in Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua's presence, which obviously means they knew Greek, which is not surprising, because probably many Jews living in Eretz Yisrael did know Greek. That's what the pagans spoke. They praised it with a verse, Yof Yofis Mibnei Adam, which is clearly playing off the idea of Yafte Lokim Yefes V'Yishkon Ba'alei Shem. The Gemara in the Bavli says, Yaf Yuso Shel Yefes, he has a Ba'alei Shem. And that's why the Gemara says that explains one shita that says you have a Torah written only in Greek if it's not in Hebrew. So the Yerushalmi talks, it looks like to be a very similar story, almost the identical story. Akilas and Unklus are the same name. But in the Bavli, it refers to an Aramaic translation. In the Yerushalmi, it refers to a Greek translation. There are several different ways of resolving this contradiction. One of them is to say that Unklus Hager did two translations, one in Greek and one in Aramaic. Another possibility is to say that there's a machlokas, the Bavli and Yerushalmi. Now, from a historical perspective, in all likelihood, even though this may make some people unhappy, the Yerushalmi's version is probably the one that's historically correct. And I say that because if Unklus was a ger, what was his native language? He lived in Eretz Yisrael. His native language could only have been one thing, which was Greek. Jews spoke Aramaic. The Greeks in Eretz Yisrael spoke, the pagans spoke Greek. It would seem highly unlikely that Akilah Sager was translating the Torah into not his native language. Be that as it may, that's the only place in the Bavli where the Targum is called by the name of Unklus. Everywhere else in the Bavli, it's just Kidim et Targumin as we translate. Whatever the case may be, whoever is actually responsible for what we call Targum Unklus, that is the official Jewish translation and has been for probably close to 2,000 years. So Targum Unklus we know. So coming back to, now one other just sort of side note, if you were to, hold on, I'm going to reach up for my Sefer here if I can see it. Sorry, I didn't have to reach up. It was on the lowest shelf. Okay. So here I'm holding an edition of the Mikraos Gedolos, which is an off-print of the Vienna 1859 edition. That is probably the front piece from the Vienna edition. And some of you might recognize just the, this is sort of the text. I'm going to do my best. Let me see if I can get a little light in there. All right. Can you sort of see it?
Yes.
Now, I'm showing you what is typically the left page. You see two Targumim on top. One of them is labeled Targum Yonasan, and one of them is labeled Targum Yerushalmi. Now, Targum Yonasan it's not a fake. It's not fake Targum, but it's a mistaken attribution. Targum Yonasan is by far the most interesting Targum. It's the most interesting Targum for starters because it has a number of halachically forbidden things that it translates, and it translates any number of things not in accordance with any known position within Chazal. It's a mistaken, I don't know what you call it, unabbreviation. It was probably abbreviated at some point, Taf Yud, which somebody labeled it as a Targum Yerushalmi, an Eretz Yisrael Targum, and then somebody unpacked it. Instead of seeing Taf Yud as Targum Yerushalmi, they saw it as Targum Yonasan. We know from the Gemara Megillah, Daf Gil Momad Aleph, it's pretty clear, Yonasan ben Uziel never wrote a Targum ala Torah. The Gemara only acknowledges one Targum, Unklus, and it talks about what Yonasan ben Uziel did. He did a Targum on Nevi'im, and the Gemara says he wanted to do one on Ksuvim, but he was persuaded to desist. So that is probably a mistaken extrapolation from Taf Yud. It happens to be, I thought this for a long time, but recent scholarship has finally come around. It's actually probably a Targum that was put together after the time of Rashi. I'm pretty certain that Targum had Rashi. I'm not going to go into why now, but there are other reasons why the scholars have come to conclusions based upon certain Midrashim that Targum draws upon, that it's a very late Targum. But there is another Targum. And by the way, the dialect of that Targum is a hodgepodge. It's a mix of Targum Unklus, of Galilean Aramaic, which is the dialect of Eretz Yisrael, of the Yerushalmi, of Bavli Aramaic. It's a total hodgepodge. It's the most interesting Targum to read, but nonetheless, it's probably a very late Targum. There is, however, another Targum printed in there, which is labeled Targum Yerushalmi. It's not on the entire Torah. It's fragmentary. It's only on certain verses for whatever reasons. It happens to be written in Galilean Aramaic. It's clearly a Targum that comes from Eretz Yisrael, and probably not late medieval. It's either early medieval or rabbinic period. And in 1959, a Spanish scholar who was looking through the Vatican collection, the Neofiti collection, which was a collection that some apostate, we would call it an apostate, they call him a ger, had donated to the Vatican. There was a manuscript mislabeled as Targum Unklus, which turned out to be a full Targum Yerushalmi of the Torah. We refer to it now as Targum Neofiti. So there is another complete Targum of the Torah, but as opposed to Unklus, that is in one dialect, it's in what, Unklus, we use the term standard literary Aramaic. It doesn't mean anything. But Targum Yerushalmi is written in Galilean Aramaic, which is the same dialect as the Talmud Yerushalmi. That is the Eretz Yisrael dialect of Aramaic. So we possess two full Targum into the Torah, Unklus and this Targum Neofiti, that are at least early, that are relatively early. Now, it's not clear whether the Gaonim, one of the Gaonim was asked a question about a Targum of Eretz Yisrael, which he was unfamiliar with, but he said maybe Ravami Ravasi put some Targum together for them. The passage is quoted in, I think, the Otzar HaGaonim, but not all the Gaonim didn't know of a Targum for Eretz Yisrael, but we actually have a Targum Yerushalmi, and some of the Rishonim did as well. And that's why, now coming back to our Tosfos, sorry for that little historical excursus. So Tosfos, again, in Dibor Maschel Ba'afilu, says V'yesh lomar mishum hachi nakat ataros v'divan afal gav she'ein bo targum yadua ela targum yushalmi. The only targum on that that is known, that's not a literal rendition of the Hebrew, is a targum yushalmi. V'tzarech likros gimel pa'amim ha'ivri, and one might have said that you just have to read the pasuk three times. Tosis says mikol makom yoser tov likros pa'am shlishis batargum. It would be better to read a third time in that targum. Now you'll ask, how do you have a targum on ataros v'divon? What does that mean? I could write a targum on, for example, and the Rishonim mentioned this. There's a pasuk in Vayishlach that says Ruvain Shimon Levi Vihuda. If I knew nothing about Aramaic and nothing about Targum, I could give you the Targum of that pasuk right now. You ready? Ruvain Shimon Levi Vihuda. That's what Targum Olkus is going to look like. It's a list of names. It's going to be translated literally. And that's a fact that we shown him ask, why doesn't the Gemara quote that pasuk? Why does it quote Ataros V'divon? And the answer is because Ataros V'divon has a Targum that doesn't translate literally. Now, I say it doesn't translate literally. It doesn't start to, you know, give us drushos on words, but the Targum does what we were, a phenomenon, what we refer to as actualization. Actualization is something when you're dealing with, let's say, a biblical text that is talking about something, you update it to your context. You update it to your context. So, to take one very common example, Kadesh Barnea, which if you did, if any of you did Targum Unklus last week, you would have seen that Kadesh Barnea, the place, is not translated as Kadesh Barnea. It's translated as Rikam Ge'ah. That's how the word Kadesh is translated, because they assume it was one place, and the name, what was originally Kadesh, in the time of Chazal, was called Rekem. It's mentioned in the first Mishnah in Gittin, Min HaRekem U'Min HaCheger. So the Targumim, all the Targumim, when they get to the name, the place Kadesh, they always write Rikam, because for them, that's what they assume was the modern-day name of that place. And you have lots and lots of cases like that where the ancient place name was one thing, the modern place name is another. So if you are writing a translation, you might very well update in your translation the place name because your reader will then know what it is referring to. So if you were to look at the Targum, I'll even read it to you here. On Parshas Matos, I'm not going to show it to you because the print is going to be pretty hard to read on the screen. But in Parshas Matos, if I look in the beginning of Perek Lamed Beis, in Targum Unklus, this printed Unklus actually has the first two names are different. It's not Ataros V'divon, it's Machlelta Umal Beshta, and the other names, some are similar, some are actually different. If you look in the Targum Yerushalmi, more of the names are actually different. So I don't think, it's pretty clear that this text in Unklus is not a good text of Unklus. This is not the original text in Unklus. This is a later text. I'm not going to pull it up now, but if I were to show you the sort of quasi-critical edition of Unklus, I could. Hold on. I can have fun with, this is the thing you can only do in the world of Zoom. I have very good parts of my library here. So I'm going to show you this. Rabbi Lookstein, maybe it's possible you might have seen something like this in your graduate school days. Let me see if I can just get some light there. Can people, Nat, can you see the text?
Yes, yes.
Does anybody recognize the vowels there?
The what?
The vowels.
Oh, you mean on top of the, letters?
On top of the word, on top of the letters. That system of vocalization. I see, Rabbi Lookstein, you probably never took Targumim with Bernstein's Zichrono Levracha.
I studied with Rabbi Mirsky, and he never discussed Targumim at all.
So if you had studied, I know that you studied with Rabbi Bernstein's Zichrono Levracha. Had you taken Targum with him, I took it with his son, you know, over 30 years ago, and he would have made you learn this system of vowels. This system of vowels is known as Nikud Bavli, Babylonian vocalization. It was a competitor to Tiberian vocalization. There's probably only one group of Jews in the world who still read this regularly, and probably only their elders, not so much the youngers, and that is Teimanim. The Yemenites used this system of vocalization forever, until recently, where they've probably been assimilated to Israeli society. The vowels basically line up one-to-one, except for Patach and Segel are the same in Babylonian vocalization. Just as in Arabic, there's no distinction between the two sounds. And there are a few other peculiarities. But if I were to look, so this is the critical edition by Alexander Sperber of Targum Unklus. And if I were to look in Bamidbar Lamed Beis, So in my Targum, and this is one of the Yemenite manuscripts that he used as the main text, Ataros v'divon v'yazer v'nimra v'cheshbon v'elolei usvam u'nevol v'om. This is the original, the Yemenites firstly have the best texts of anybody amongst the Jewish community in general, of the Rambam, of the Onglus, and here as one of their manuscripts has literal translation. And the bottom in the critical notes, he's going to tell you, oh yes, some of the other printings, especially from Europe, have other words for Ataros v'divon. So anyway, so that's what Tosfos is aware. Firstly, Tosfos clearly assumed that Targum Onklus translates literally, but he also was aware of Targum Yerushalmi, which in fact is a non-literal translation. It's updating the place names. Okay, fine. So now, the Gemara, so now that we know what our mitzvah is, we know we're not, but we should use Rashi or Onklus, and we should read the Pasuk three times if there's no Rashi there. So now the Gemara continues. When do you read Shnai Mirkut V'Echad Targum? So the Gemara says the following. Rabibi Barabaye, Savar La'ashluminu L'Parshiyasa D'Chulei Shata B'Mala Yoma D'Kipure. Rabibi Barabaye thought, you know, he was learning in yeshiva, and so he didn't have so many days off. I suspect that back in the days of Bava, when they learned in yeshiva, they had yeshiva Sunday through Friday. One of the days they had off was going to be Erev Yom Kippur, because Erev Yom Kippur is a yontif. You're supposed to have a major sudos there. So what did this base Medrash Bacher think to do? He thought, okay, you know what? That's what I'm going to do, Shnai Mikra V'Echad Targum. I wouldn't chas v'shalom take out any time during the year from studying Torah Bava, but I'll make up my Shnai Mikra V'Echad Targum on Erev Yom Kippur. So Tanalei Chia Barav Midifti. So Rav Chia Barav said to Rabibi, he said, "Ksiv ini semes nafsho seichem b'sishala chodesh bo erev." So the Torah says that you're supposed to afflict yourself, your souls, meaning fast, on the ninth towards the evening. So the Gemara says we don't fast on the ninth. V'chi b'sisha misanin, v'lo basara misanin. You fast on the tenth. So why does the Torah suggest that you're fasting on the ninth? So the Gemara says, "Ela lo merlacha." That anyone who eats, who has makes a suda, it was a major suda, I think, in the Galilee, was Erev Yom Kippur. They used to have a feast. Right? In the way, I think, probably, I suspect this is the Rav, or maybe even the Rambam, but I think I heard this from Shechter, said Yom Kippur is a Yom Tov like every other Yom Tov. And just like every other Yom Tov, has a mitzvah of kibbutz oneg. Kibbutz is the clothing you wear, and oneg is enjoying tasty food and things like that. Yom Kippur has the same mitzvah. So Yom Kippur comes, unlike Tisha B'Av, we dress in Big Day Shabbos, Big Day Yom Tov, but you're not allowed to eat on Yom Kippur. So the mitzvah achila on Yom Kippur, oneg, but Yom Kippur is Erev Yom Kippur. So that's what he says to Rabibi, that kol ha'misane, kol ha'ochel, b'tshi, the Torah gives you this chus, as if you had been asked to fast both days and you fasted both days. That's what he says. So how are you going to spend all day? Shnai Mikra V'Echad Targum, to make up, even for a Bibi, was really quick. He'll get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. He'll start to Shnai Mikra V'Echad Targum. By the time Yom Kippur comes, maybe he finished with Zosa Bracha, but when's he going to eat Sudas Yom Kippur? So you can't do an Erev Yom Kippur. And he was, remember, leaving it probably till the end of the year, because he wanted to finish by, I assume, Simchas Torah. Okay, so then, Savar Lat Duminhu. He still didn't want to take out of his time during the weeks of the year. So he figured, you know what? I'll do it earlier in the year. Maybe, I don't know when, some point on Yom Tov. So he thought, I just want to get it done. So Amar Lai Husaba Tanina, the elder told him, some elder, we don't know who the Saba was, Uvavat Shalayakdim Vishaloya Acher. As long as you're not Maktim or Ma'acher, you're not allowed to do it early and you're not allowed to do it late. We'll talk about it in a moment. What is the ideal time frame for Shnai Mekhra Paragon? And therefore, you do it on a weekly basis. What's kind of interesting here, and I have not seen any of the Rishonim or any of the commentators make this observation. What's interesting is that the Saba could have told them the same, that this answer could have been given for the first one also. In other words, first he thought to do it at the end of the year on Erev Yom Kippur. And he was told, no, because you have other things you have to be doing Erev Yom Kippur. Now, but someone could have said to him, Uvavad shelo yaktim velo yacher. Because the next story is, okay, I can't do it every Yom Kippur, so sometime at the beginning of the year, maybe Isru Chag, maybe they didn't go back to yeshiva until the day after Isru Chag. So he decided, Isru Chag of Sukkot, I'm going to go through Shnai Mechra Targum, do the entire thing, and I'm going to be Pater. So the Saba said to him, no, Uvavad Shalo Yakdin v'le'acher. So that answer really could have been given to Rabibi's first idea also. In other words, you're not allowed to do it everything in bulk. You have to do it piecemeal across the year. Why is that so? So the Gemara just says, ki da amar lehu Rabbi Shua ben Levi Levnei, ashlimu parshiyosaychu im atzibur shnayim mikavecha targum. Now, to be honest, and I haven't seen anybody comment on this, I don't really understand why the Gemara needs to quote the statement. Because the Gemara began on Chesamon Aleph, la'olam yashlim adam parshiyosav,
Atzibur.
In other words, it was there already. So I'm not going to suggest this, and I haven't checked the Kisveyad, the manuscripts, and I'm sure it's not going to turn up anything. But if I were a speculative person, I would argue that the words Im HaTzibur were not originally in Rabbi Ami's statement. In other words, Rabbi Ami would have said, La'olam yashlam adam parshiyosav shnayim mikavecha targum. And then Rabibi, knowing Rav Ami's statement, said, okay, fine, so I'll make sure every year to complete my shnayim mikavecha targum. But what Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi adds when he says to his kids, you know, other than saying in Aramaic, Ashlimu parshiyosaychu im HaTzibur. That's all he doesn't add anything. It's literally just two words translated to Aramaic. Unless it's possible that Rabbi Ami did not have those words in his statement, or the alternative is Rabibi hadn't heard them. Rabibi knew Yidu Shnayim Mikavecha Targum, but he had never heard Rabbi Ami's statement to realize that it has to be im HaTzibur. And here the Gemara quotes Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi instead of quoting whoever it was in the name of Rav Huna Bar Yehuda in the name of Rabbi Am. Okay, but either way, one is not supposed to do it in bulk. One is supposed to do it a bismano in its appropriate time. Why? I would argue two reasons. Number one, which is probably the pshat in the Gemara, is that it's supposed to be im hatzibur, right? It's supposed to be partially a communal act, especially if you may see it as analogous to Kriyas HaTorah, then it's supposed to be done during the time period that the tzibur is reading Parsha X. That's when you do Shnayim Mikavecha Targum for Parsha X. And we'll see this in Tosis in 1 second. Alternatively, there's a very strong argument to be made that there's much greater value, instead of learning all of Chumash in one day, even if you put in the same amount of time, to doing one parak of Chumash every day for the entire year. If you're talking about, you know, wanting to establish consistency and a kind of discipline, it's much more valuable from a spiritual perspective, from the perspective of, I'll say, spiritual growth, doing piece by piece by piece every day consistently, rather than doing things in at first an intense fashion and then not doing them at all. Now, what then is the time frame? What is called a week? So some of you may know, and the Rishonim point this out, that when we calculate when does the week begin? In halacha?
Saturday night.
So then, no, the answer is Wednesday. Wednesday begins the week. How does Wednesday begin the week?
Shabbos is in the middle.
So Shabbos is in the middle, and why? So firstly, when it comes to Gittin, apparently, somehow, I'm not involved in the writing of Gittin, but the Gemara says that Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday belong to the Shabbos that follows. And then Sunday and Monday and Tuesday belong to the Shabbos that preceded it. Now, you know, by the way, there's one halacha with respect to Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday that makes it clear that it belongs to the previous Shabbos, which is
Havdalah.
If you didn't make Havdalah Motze Shabbos, you may make Havdalah without Bori Mera Eish, without Nair, up until the end of Tuesday. Because the assumption is it's still Achar HaShabbos until you get to the beginning, until Tuesday night, which is actually Wednesday. If you want to see another halacha, which also indicates that the week begins on Wednesday, the Gemara in the first parak in Shabbos tells us, there are a number of halachos, I'll just cite one, with a famous interpretation of the Ramban and the Baal Hamor. You're not allowed to depart on a boat ride, in mafligin bisvina, shlosha yamin kodem ha-Shabbos, unless it's just Lebar Mitzvah. So you're not allowed to start on a pleasure cruise if it leaves on Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. It has to leave on Sunday, Monday, or Tuesday. Now, why is it that you're not allowed to go on the boat? So there are like seven opinions in Rishonim how to read the Gemara. But the Baal HaMor and the Ramban both say something similar, that it's usher to do that because it's nire kemasne l'chalal es ha-Shabbos. You're putting yourself into a situation where there may be sakana that necessitates being mechalal Shabbos. And if that were true, then why are you allowed to get on a boat on Sunday, Monday, or Tuesday? So the answer is because we're not going to say you can never get on a boat for pleasure purposes. And I don't know, maybe we would, but we don't. And therefore, it's only nirek kemasne lechalal asa Shabbos when you get on the boat before Shabbos. But if you get on the boat on Sunday, Monday, or Tuesday, you're not getting on the boat before Shabbos. You're actually getting on the boat after Shabbos. So in light of that particular issue, Tosfos, Dibur Hamasfil, the third Tosfos on our page on Chesamid Beis, Yashlim Parshi Yosef HaMatzibor. Tosfos says, Nired dechol ha-shavua, the entire week, it would appear, Mikevan demaschilin likros ha-parsha, once you start reading the parsha, this parsha, let's say Korach, tahainu mimilchas Shabbos ve'elach ad Shabbos haba'o, nikres imatzibur. From the time that the tzibur first reads the parsha of the week, which is Shabbos mincha, until they finish reading next Shabbos, so that's the time that you're supposed to do. That's called imhatzibur. Now, there, in light of that, and Natosa says the afal gav de l'inyan gittin lo nikra kame Shabbos elam reviva elach. Even though with respect to gittin, before Shabbos is only from Wednesday and onward. Nonetheless, that's not what actually applies here. Okay. Now, Tosfos continues and says the following. Uzman hashlama yesh b'midrash, that when is the terminal point of reading Shnei Mikra? Tosfos says there's a medrash that shlosha dvarim tzivu rabbeinu akadosh levana b'shah sheniftar. Rebbe gave his children in the Medrash three things in his ethical will to his children. Three things that they should do or not do. Number one, shalatochlu lechem b'Shabbos ad shetigmeru kol haparsha. You shouldn't eat food on Shabbos until they finish the parsha. Mashma the kodem achila tzarech lashlim. You have to finish before you eat. And Tosfos doesn't say this explicitly, but I believe it's how it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch. Which eating on Shabbos are we talking about here, the night or the day? The answer is the day. Because when does the Tzibur begin reading Parshas Korach? Yesterday at Mincha. When will the Tzibur finish reading Parshas Korach?
In the morning.
In the morning. And therefore, the Suda that Rebbe refers to is Suda Shachris. The lunch of Shabbos is by that point, before you eat lunch, ideally, Mitzvah Namuvchar, I'm sorry, so Mitzvah Namukhar, Tosfos will say, you're supposed to have read it before. But Tosfos says, Umiyu imishlima la'achar achila shapri dami. Even if you finish afterwards, it's still good. Mikoma kol mitzvah namukhar kodem achila. Now, the truth is, if you didn't finish it on Shabbos, you still finish it during the week. You have up to Simchas Torah to finish that which fell through the cracks. The one interesting question, which I have not seen addressed halacha l'maisa, is the following. What is the din on Shabbos afternoon before Mincha? Now, on the one hand, you would say the Tzibur hasn't started Parshas Korach because they haven't read Korach yet, the last thing they read is Shlach. On the other hand, once Mincha Gedola comes, once 6.5 hours have been completed of the day, on Shabbos, that's the time that already the Tzibur can daven Mincha if they choose. Some people do daven relatively early. So do you say once it's ra'oi for the Tzibur to read the Parsha, namely once you can daven Mincha on Shabbos afternoon, the time period for Shnei Mikra Chatarim begins, or do you say no, that actually the Tzibur has to have read the Kriyas HaTorah. Interestingly enough, in Rav Shechter's coronavirus tshuvas, so someone apparently wanted to suggest that you're not obligated to do Shnei Mikra Vechatargum because the Tzibur isn't reading Kriyas HaTorah. And Rav Shechter did not like that. He thought that was a ridiculous suggestion. And I think it's pretty obvious that even if the Tzibur is not reading Kriyas HaTorah, there's a Zman for it. But if that's true, then I would be inclined to say that Lechatchila, Mitzvah Min HaMuvchar, you need to finish the Shnei Mikra Chatargum before you eat lunch on Shabbos. But lechatchila, even if you didn't do mitzvah namukhar, you have to finish before Zman Mincha Gedola. You have to finish before the time that the Tzibur theoretically could read the new Parsha. Because it's not really dependent upon whether the Tzibur is reading or not. It's dependent upon what is the designated time for Parshas Korach. The designated time for Parshas Korach, the first time you could have read Parshas Korach was yesterday at whenever Mincha Gedola was, let's say 1 o'clock. And from then until Mincha Gedola of this coming Shabbos, that's the Zman Lechatchila of Korach. Mitzvah Namuvchar, finish it before you eat lunch on Shabbos. B'diavad, if you didn't, so until we get to Simchas Torah, we have enough time to be mashal. I don't know, there's no reason anybody should be backlogged about the Shnei Mikra Chatargum. If for those tziburs that are going to catch up on Kriyas HaTorah, so the backlog is getting bigger and bigger, and Simchas Torah is starting to loom. But shuls are starting to get there. So, Larry, I don't see you on my screen. That's okay. But I hope that you're going to – there you are. I hope that you got people lined up. If KJ is going to be catching up all the parshios, that's going to be one long Kriyas HaTorah. So, all right.
Is it an obligation to do it on Shabbos, or you can do it during the week too?
You have to. Rav Shechter said it makes sense. He thinks the Kriya has to be done on Shabbos. It has to be done on Shabbos.
Yeah. Rabbi?
Yeah. Rabbi, I may have missed. I have a question. I may have missed it. Is the Kriya B'tzibur included specifically? Not included specifically? Where do we learn that?
It's not included in your Shnayim Mikvecha Targum, but the one thing, I don't recommend doing this, but the one thing the Shulchan Aruch does say in terms of learning during Kriya Satorah, the one thing you're allowed to do, so you can use the time, but just listening to the Baal Kore does not help you fulfill your obligation. Because I think the crucial point is your reading, it's Shnayim Mikra, it has to take place. But if you want to read along with the Baal Kore very quiet, I don't recommend it because shul could get noisy that way, then you'd have to be enunciated with your mouth. So then you could read it during that time according to the Mechaber. But the Baal Kore's Kriya itself does not enable you, it does not exempt you for one of your readings. Larry?
What about the Ola who's getting the Aliyah and reading along with the Baal Kore?
So his does, yeah. His, okay. Yeah. But that only gets you a small part, you know.
Okay.
If you get if it's Matos Masei and you get Revi, which joins the Parshias, so you get in like 70 plus Psukim. But outside of that, you know, you don't get too much.
Okay. Do you have to read it out loud yourself, or could you just do it, you know?
I think you need to read it out loud. Yeah.
You have to actually hear your own voice.
I think so. Generally speaking, with the tefillah, we try to avoid it will disturb others. But mitzvah kriyashma, for example, kriyashma, there's a machlokas, if karav alo hashmi ala ozno, we'll get to it, God willing. We're moving along nicely. Not so long. In kriyashma, there's a machlokas atanaim im karav alo hishmi ala ozno. If you couldn't hear it with your own ears, whether you're yotze or not. We paskin your yotze, but that's b'diavad. L'chatchila, you're supposed to be able to hear your own kriyashma. I assume every mitzvah of kriya is like that. But the threshold is, you could be whispering, but you still have to be able to hear it yourself. The kar has to be mashmi ala ozno. So yeah.
Rabbi, please.
No. My question was, is there a textual basis on Yashlam Odom Parshios of Shnai Mikrovecha Targum? I mean, Rav Yehuda makes the comment, but what's the basis for it? Where did he get it from?
I assume it's a Takanas Chachamim.
Okay.
By the way, here's Isaac. That's a very good question. I never actually thought about the question from the angle you asked. The truth is, the formulation of La'olam Yashlim is a kind of formulation that sometimes is something which is more midas chasidus than actually a halacha. But that's not the way that we show them the Sifrei HaPsach took it. They took it as a chiyuv, even though I think if you did la'olam, if you were to look up la'olam with words that follow it in this kind of grammatical format, I would be surprised if you don't find a number of things that are more like pizza tova, good advice, best practices, rather than a chiyuv. But the way it's been ideally, understood is actually a chiyuv.
I guess ideally, okay.
Rabbi, the formulation of this in that tzibur, Rabbi tried to do it outside the time in two different ways, and it was reprimanded that he should stick within the week of doing it with the tzibur. So what's the basis for a tashlumin concept here?
So again, I could now take Isaac's question and use it. La'olam yashlam adam parshiyos avim atzibur. But if you didn't finish it with the tzibur, so then do it afterwards. But I think the assumption is, again, if you take the model Shnayim Mikra HaTargum, fundamentally as the private individual's Kriyas HaTorah, then in the same way, the goal is to complete the Torah by Simchas Torah in the public reading, and the way many Achronim hold that if you no matter how many weeks you missed, if it's before Simchas Torah, you're supposed to make it up. In the same way, the Yachid should also make it up. And the truth is, if you weren't Mekayim Shnayim Mikra HaTargum, said it wouldn't be such a big Avera either having read it again. It would be okay. It would be okay. So ideally, read the week. And if you didn't, okay. So you just did a mitzvah Talmud Torah. Okay. So now the Gemara actually had three statements of Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, which was, first was he said to his children, Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi said, Ashlimu parshiyosaychu ematzibur shnayim mikrovecha targum, number one. Number two, v'hi zaharu b'varidin k'Rabbi Yehuda. It's not Rabbi Yehuda Omer asher yishkot es havaridin. So just a comment, just to explain what this means. When you do shechita on an animal, and I say an animal, I mean a behema, an ox, a cow, a sheep, if you're shechting a deer, any of those things, as opposed to a bird, you have to shech, you have to cut through a majority of both the kane and the veshin, the esophagus, the trachea, and the esophagus. If you're shechting a bird, you only need to cut through a majority of either one of them, either the kane or the veshin. But Rabbi Yehuda says that when you're cutting a bird, when you're shechting a bird, you also have to cut the jugular. The reason for this is nothing to do with shechita. The concern is getting enough blood out of the bird. And the reason why it's only a din by a bird is because they would often take the bird and roast it whole, like a whole chicken. They would cook it that way. And then even though you salted it, he was concerned you wouldn't get enough of the blood out. If you shech the jugular during shechita, when the animal's still alive, the blood is, much more blood comes out right then. So then after you salt it, technically speaking, by the way, if you roast the bird over the fire, not in a pot, you don't even technically, you shouldn't even eat the salted. Certainly when you have a piece of meat, a regular slab of meat, when you roast it over the fire, you don't need to do al pi din malicha. You don't need to salt it because the fire draws the blood away. I mean, the only reason really why you have to do malicha on meat, you have to salt it, is because if you want to cook it in a pot, so when you cook it in a pot, once you start to cook it, the blood comes out, and then the blood will now go back in. And in fact, not only that, but I don't recommend this, I don't personally do this, but if a person likes the taste of raw meat, and you shecht an animal, and you sort of cut a piece, and you just wash it off, you don't have to salt it. The prohibition of eating blood that's in muscle meat in an animal, there's no iser until the blood comes out. And if it comes out and then goes back in, it's a problem. But as long as it's never left, let's say, the slice of meat that it's in, so you have to wash off the surface because that blood is what we call dam evarim shepimesh. It is already separated. But if it has stayed inside the piece of meat, there's no prohibition on that blood, on regular muscle meat. It's not true like limbs that blood pools in, like the heart. It's not true. But in regular meat, that would be the case. So anyway, but because they would roast the chicken or birds whole, Rabbi Yehuda said that you have to shech the varidin during shechita. You have to shech the jugular. Ditzran, Rabbi Yehuda omar shishchas varidin. Okay, that was his etza. I don't think we paskin that way. At least it doesn't appear. I don't think so. But he recommended to his children that they should have that chumrah. And finally, one last one, which is v'hizaru b'zakein sheshachach talmudo. You should be very careful to have kavod for an old person, someone who's not well, who has lost, forgotten what he learned. And as Rashi explained, Sheshachach Talmudo is Mechamas Onso. Because, maybe the Gemara says, does the Gemara say that a little bit later? 1 second. Doesn't say, the Gemara says, Mechamas Onso. Onso means it's not that he stopped learning and wasn't interested, but Rashi writes, Shechala Ushanitrad Bedochach Mizonos Yizarabo Lechado. Make sure you have Kavod. And why? Because the Amrinon Luchos v'Shivrei Luchos Menachos Baron, both the Luchos, which represents the Talmud Chacham, who still retains all his Torah, and the Shivrei Luchos were also placed in the Torah. When a vessel once contained Torah, even though it doesn't contain Torah the same way anymore, so you have to have Kavod as well. I think that the message behind this is it's kind of a strange analogy, but it's very simple. Sometimes people achieve a certain pinnacle in life, and then life circumstances sort of change things, and they sort of are reduced from their status. And there's a temptation of other people to sort of judge, and say, you see, the person is not so important, you know, because look what happened. And what the Gemara is telling us, and when it says mechmas onso, is that we all tend to think that our accomplishments are our own, and when other people don't accomplish, it's because they didn't work hard enough, and we worked hard. And the truth is sometimes we did work hard, and sometimes people didn't work hard. But sometimes everybody worked hard equally, and sometimes some people had mazel, and some people didn't have mazel. So when you have a zakein sheshachach talmudo, you have to remember that the fact that he is where he is now, even though he once was somewhere else, is maybe a function of mazel rather than a function of, well, you see, he's not really deserving or he didn't work hard. So those are the
interesting. It could also apply to dementia. Interesting perspective.
Correct. Although there, you're right. But there, I think a person would be less likely to look at that person and not have kavod for them. Right, someone was a real Talmud Chacham. We instinctively, when someone suffers dementia, we instinctively have have empathy, we have compassion, you know, we think it's terrible. We don't see it as a reflection of the person. But the examples that the Gemara, that Rashi quotes is understanding of the Gemara, Shechala could be that way, but Nitrad Bedochak Mizonos is not a person who is not sentient fully. It's just life circumstances made it very, very difficult. So we don't always, it's true with dementia as well. We don't control life circumstances. So we should be hesitant to look at someone else's state and our state and draw conclusions from the differences between them. Okay. Any questions? We'll stop here. We still have we're now back a little bit of Agada. Still, we're almost done with the Agada. So if you're unhappy about the Agada we've been doing, the good news is we're just about at the peak. If you're happy about the Agada that we're doing, I hope you'll enjoy the Halacha as well. Any questions about today's shir?
So with respect to reading the Torah and catching up, mm-hmm. I assume there's no Birchas HaTorah and there's no Aliyahs. It's just reading through the...
So there are multiple ways of doing the answers. No, there is. There are a couple of ways of doing it. Firstly, the simplest way of doing it, maybe not anymore, that we've already crossed multiple svarim, but in theory would be to start with the parsha that we didn't read and read Rishon all the way through until the Rishon of this week's parsha. And now that runs into problems now that we've crossed Sfarim boundaries. It's not clear that you're supposed to read across a Sefer. The Gemara never says anything, but apparently some Achronim say so. So Rav Shechter's Eitza would be the following. His Eitza, to make things palatable for the Tzibor, and I don't think this is obviously not a problem, obviously, is to read a Parsha. For the moment, let's assume you were giving more than one person an Aliyah. To read a Parsha, 7 Kruim. And then from Maftir to go back and read one parsha that we list. And it'll go back to Kisisa. And then next week, you know, read 7 Kruim, and then read Vayakel, read Vayakel Pakute, and so on, and catch up that way. Or if you feel the need, if you have enough weeks, make your Maftir very long. His Eitza actually started out with a tremendous act of chesed for bar mitzvah kids who missed their reading right. The parsha. Rav Shechter's suggestion was, read the parsha 7 Aliyos, and then let someone else read, and then let the bar mitzvah boy read his entire parsha, the maftir, and then you read daf Torah, because you read daf Torah of the last
of the last piece. The Torah.
So his eitz in general for catching up, for getting a bar mitzvah boy, would be, okay, you know, if the tzibur is capable of it, so read the 7 kruim, then read one parsha to make up. Next week, make up another parsha. If it were up to me, I would just want to swallow the medicine once. That'd be very, depending on, you know, who's there, that could be very difficult. But that was his eitza. But it is, you would make, the only question I have that I don't know if he addresses, because Rav Shechter really doesn't like the idea of making a maftir, an eighth aliyah, if one person's getting all the aliyahs. You know, it's bad enough that he's making 7 brachas, you know, 2 brachas 7 times. So that's why he said, don't have a maftir, you know, that make the maftir one of the shivakrum, which is eitza generally. And for this, I'm not sure what he would say. I think he doesn't want you making 6 aliyahs out of it, for whatever reasons. So if you were to ask me, I would say, once you're making it up, make an eighth aliyah for a maftir. And if you can get a separate person, that would be good if it's safe enough. What I would say, by the way, is that if the Baal Kriya has a, it's actually easy to do. Someone in your pod. If you were reading Larry, I would tell you, take Jeremy there and let him at least get the aliyah for a maftir. And then you could, and I don't worry about father, son, you don't have to worry about in this context. And then if you were the Baal Kriya who was reading everything, you could still read for him, the Kriyas HaTorah. So that's what I would recommend. However much you want to do it as a maftir, but you do it as with brachos before and after.
And let's say you did it on a Shabbos afternoon.
So that's the interesting question that he didn't address.
Like alone, just, you know, say, okay, we'll spend a few hours reading the Torah. So, or that's not good enough.
Well, you need a minion.
Right, I'm saying, so you have a minion.
The real question would be the following. I don't know if this would be appropriate or not. I thought about that. The question is, I don't know if you can read Kriyas HaTorah in the morning once you've read Shiva Kruim and made a Ahati Kaddish and then read Kriyas HaTorah again. I'm not sure. I would say the following, but I'm not sure it's ideal from a different perspective. Don't read Kriyas HaTorah in the morning. Read Daven Shachris, Daven Musaf, and then let people eat. And anybody who wants to come back, you know, let come back and let the tzibur then have Kriyas HaTorah. And then you can, you know, read for 3 hours or something like that. You know, I don't know how, I'm not sure how necessary technically it is to have Kriyas HaTorah between Shacharis and Musaf. It's what we normally do. But Musaf has a Zman Kitzvah. I'm not sure. And I'm not sure what would happen if it's after Mincha Gedolah. I'd have to see. I don't know how many people would be willing to, you know, go for that. Again, my peculiarity, I would say, let's make 1 week a Hanetz Minyan, and let's get up, and we're just going to, you know, maybe I'll have a kid, maybe let people make something to eat after Shachris, and then just, you know, plow through Kriyas HaTorah. Because I think what you could definitely do, if you're going to do it one shot, is you should be able to read, first Aliyah will be Kishisa through Pikudei, and then break up by Yikra as one Aliyah, two Aliyahs, and then Bamidbar into, you know, break it up by many Aliyahs. I think you really could do that. And it would seem to me that would be the logical way to do it, but that's only if people are willing to sit there for 3 or 4 hours. So.
Also, what about switching the Baal Korah if it's not you who can read all of them?
So,
in the middle.
So I don't think that's. So then, what I would do is I would just make more Aliyahs, because then your person is making a new bracha. That's all. I would split it that way. And if you have more than Shivakurim, it's fine. On Shabbos, you're allowed to add on. So yeah, it'll be an adventure. I'm looking forward to the adventure, but yes. Okay.
You better start running marathons.
What, to get away so they can't pull me in? Listen,
No, just to keep going.